All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Lamed Hey 35. We are starting from the second line on Lamed Hey Amad Aleph. Again, a thank you to Yehuda for giving this shir yesterday. So we're picking up again. You ended off yesterday with a beautiful Mishnah. So the Mishnah spoke about Nimnu Min Ashpia. So again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit. So the Mishnah explained that originally an Amona, a widow, was only able to collect her ksuva from the estate of her deceased husband, from the estate of the orphans, if she took a shvua, if she took an oath. And the goal of that oath was to make sure that she did not go ahead and collect anything, that she did not get prepayment during the lifetime of her husband. Then the Mishnah explained that as a result of a takana of Rabbi Gamliel, remember again, the common theme in all of these Mishnayos are takanos, are enactments of Rabbi Gamliel. So because of a takana of Rabbi Gamliel, nimnu mila hashpia, they stopped administering an oath ultimately to the almanas, but again she was allowed to collect through taking of a neder. So says the Mishnah, says the Gemara, nimnu melashbi, a second line down, Lamed Hey 35a, my timer. So why is it ultimately that they stopped the almanas from taking shavuos in order to collect? So ilayma mishum d'rav kana d'amrav kana va'amrili amrav yudamrav ma'aseh ba'adlim echad. So maybe it's because of the following type of situation. So the Gemara tells a story that there was an episode with an Adam Echad, a certain individual, B'sheni B'tzuros. B'sheni B'tzuros means during the years of a famine. And what happened? Shehifkid dinar zahav itzel almana. He went ahead and he deposited a particular dinar, a gold dinar, with a widow. Now remember, he deposited it with her in order for her to guard it, in order for her to safekeep it, to keep watch over it. V'nichaso b'khad shel kemach. What happens? He placed it in a receptacle of flour. So meaning again, he placed it in her property, in a receptacle of flour. Told her about it. Now she totally forgot about it. So what happened? She baked a loaf of bread using the flour, and included in that loaf of bread was what? Was the dinar zahav. And she ended up baking this loaf of bread and giving it to a poor person. So she baked in the dinar shel zahav and she gave it away. What happened? So a little while later, the owner of the dinar zahav came to him and said, give me back my dinar. So she said, Amrale. She said, first, I don't know what you're talking about. So remember again, she did not realize that she had baked it into the loaf of bread and given it away. So Amrale, Yehena samha maves be'echad mibaneha shal osa isha, im nehenesi midinar choklum. So, Abba says, she was so sure that she did not benefit from this dinar at all, that she made a very strong statement. She literally said, one of my children should die if I benefited from your dinar at all. Meaning she was trying to make such a strong declarative statement that I did not do anything with your money. And she was so convinced that she did not do anything with his money that literally she was willing to say, I swear on my child's life that nothing happened with this money. So the Gemara says, Amru, lo hayu yamim mu'atin, ad shemes echan mibaneha. Right, Nebuch, so it was only a matter of days until one of her sons died. As well say, because at the end of the day, as we'll see in just a moment, she did get benefit from the dinar. Amru kama. So Chazal, when they heard about this story, they said, if someone went ahead, someone who swore truthfully, and yet again, there are such severe repercussions, all the more so someone who swears falsely. So the Gemara says, my time a yansha. So first of all, the Gemara says, so let's analyze the story for just a little bit. Why was she punished? Meaning the fact that one of her sons died indicates to us that she did in fact misappropriate the dinar zav. But she didn't misappropriate anything. Meaning at the end of the day, remember, all she did was what? She accidentally baked it into a loaf of bread, but she didn't get benefit from it. What benefit did she actually receive from it? To which the Gemara says, the ishtar shila makom dinar. Oh, because we'll see what happened over here. At the end of the day, she did get benefit from the dinar. How so? Because remember, that dinar took up space. That space that the dinar took up was space that she saved a flower. So whatever the volume of the dinar itself is, that volume of flour she saved for herself. So at the end of the day, she actually benefited from the dinar zav. Umay, Misha Nishba Be'emes. So the Gemara says, why did Chazal say that if somebody who swears truthfully has suffered such severe repercussions, they will say at the end of the day, she didn't swear truthfully. She sweared falsely. Right? In other words, again, she swore that she did not get any benefit from the dinar. While in truth, what happened? She did get benefits from the dinar. To which the Gemara says, you're right. Kemisha Nishba Be'emes. The idea in this story over here is, although she technically swore falsely, in reality, she swore truthfully. Why? Because to the best of her knowledge, she was not getting any kind of benefit from the dinar. So what Chazal were struck by in this story was the idea that here was someone who, to the best of their knowledge, was swearing absolutely truthfully. In other words, we'll say, although on a technical level she was swearing falsely because she did get benefit from the dinar, but again, she had no idea that she was getting any kind of benefit from the dinar. So Chazal were saying, if someone who swore with such simplicity and someone who swore ultimately, again, without realizing they were doing anything wrong, suffered such severe repercussions, all the more so someone who swears intentionally falsely. So the Gemara says, one second. So we'll say, now let's follow the train of thought over here. Remember, just to keep the progression. Remember, first stage in this process was when a woman an almana wanted to collect her ksuba. So what would happen? Almana wanted to collect ksuba. What would happen? Shavua. Now the Mishnah says Rabbi Gamliel stopped the shavua. We're trying to figure out why did Rabbi Gamliel stop the shavua. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's this kind of case because the shavua is, you know, the Shita Sarambam, the Rambam Paskins, that Shavuas Shabbat, false oath, is a violation of the first of the Ten Commandments, Ab Anochi Hashem Elokecha. In addition to Losisa, it's also Anochi. So again, it's a very severe prohibition. So maybe that's why the rabbis stopped the usage of a Shavua. Shavua is a very dangerous thing, because here, the Gemara brings this story of a woman who again, had absolutely no malicious intent, was just swearing to the best of her abilities, but yet again, she ended up swearing falsely, and the repercussions were so high. Therefore, the rabbis said, no Shavua. So the Gemara says, "Imi shumha ma'iria amana afilu grusha nami." Mayor, choose a door. Which door are you coming in over here? Right, front, back. I don't know where it's like. Where's Mayor? Where's Waldo over here? All right, good. So says the Gemara. So what happens? So says the Gemara. If that's the case, that it's about the severity of a shavua, then ma'iria amana. Why is this only amana afilu grusha nami? In other words, if that's the case, that this is all about the severity of an oath. If that's what this is about, then lemaisa, really the psak halacha should be no one collects a ksuva through a shavua. If that, because again, really, you understand what the Gemara is saying? This is really about shavua and not about amana. Therefore, the halacha should really be anyone who wants to collect the ksuva, whether it's from the husband or whether it's from the estate, we shouldn't do it with the shavua because shavuas are like playing with fire. So why dafka limit this to an almana? Should be a grusha as well, to which the Gemara says, Alma, so the Gemara says, Alama amana bizer mishmuel, lo shanu ela amana. So we have Rabbi Zeris and Amos Shmuel, that this halacha that we said that you can't collect the ksuva with a shavua is dafka only by an almana. About grusha mashbien osa. But ultimately, by a grusha, what's the halacha? I will say, a grusha does take a shavua. So obviously, I will say, this is not about a shavua. Because if it was about the severity of shavua and the possibility for taking an erroneous shavua, so the halacha should be, no one should be able to collect their ksuva, be it an almana or a grusha through shavua. We should use another mechanism for connection. But yet, that's not the case. Clearly, again, Chazal are saying it's only a grusha who can't collect with the shavua. But let's say, again, a grusha. Remember, again, say a woman gets a ksuva one of two ways. Either if she becomes a widow or she gets divorced. And yet, again, you have over here Rabbi Zeris and Rabbi Shmuel, that if a grusha wants to collect her ksuva, she can do so as long as what? As long as she takes a shavua. To which the Gemara says, Amana Shaini. So we'll say, remember, back to square one. We need to figure out, why did Rabbi Gamliel change the playing field? Originally, if an Amana wanted to take a Shavua, wanted to collect her Ksuva, it's a very simple process. What's the process? She goes to Beis Din in the presence of the Yesomim, the presence of the orphans, the inheritors of the estate, and she makes a very simple Shavua. I swear, I never received any payment for my Ksuva. Done. Rabbi Gamliel comes along and says, no, we can't do this anymore. We have to change the circumstances or change the mechanism for connection. We're trying to figure out why does Rabbi Gamliel feel compelled to change the mechanism for connection? To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Amana Shaini, listen to this. De Bahahi Hano, De Katarcha Kame Diasmi, Asya la'ariya heteras. Well, so let's translate the words, and then we'll go back and understand what it means. So the Gemara says, Amana is different. Why? Because of the benefit that she accrues, because she worked hard on behalf of the orphans, she'll become to be more heter. She'll become to go ahead and provide a legitimate excuse as to why she should be able to collect. So what does this refer to? Take a look at Rashi. Asya lure hetera. Rashi says, Pidavar muat. Usavura she'ein piraun la shekvar. Excuse me. Shebeschir tarcha not laso. So we'll say, watch this. Here's what we're concerned about. Let's say a woman received partial payment for her ksuva while her husband was alive. And that's certainly possible. Husband could want to give her something specific. So now what happens? Husband dies. Now we ask her, you want to collect your ksuva? Have you received any partial payment? So the Gemara says, she would be tempted to lie. Why? Because remember, even though I receive, let's say I'm the almana, even though I receive some partial payment, but that payment pales in comparison to what? To the effort I put in for the children, for the yesomim. So I could make a cogent argument that little bit of money that I received during my husband's lifetime, that amount of money should be offset by the amount of effort I expended. Now the lashon is for the yesomim, because remember, those yesomim may or may not be her children. Therefore, again, the Gemara says the concern over here is that even if she received partial payment for a ksuva during the lifetime of the husband, she may lie after the husband dies, lie that she did not receive any part of the payment for the ksuva. But why would a good person lie? So we'll say, why do good people lie all the time? Because at the end of the day, they could justify the lie. How could I justify the lie? I'm not really lying. That amount that I received during my husband's lifetime, that should really count towards what? Towards what? Towards the effort that I put into raising the kids. That wasn't really ksuva money. That was really effort for raising the children money. And therefore, at the end of the day, I haven't really received any money for my ksuva. Therefore, I feel justified in lying and taking a shvua, and not really lying. I feel justified in taking a shvua that I have not received any payments for the ksuva. And both say, understand a case like this. So therefore, the Gemara is suggesting over here that by Almana, Chazal had a particular concern that she may swear falsely, but not for the purpose, not malicious intent, not for the purpose of lying, but it's what's called a moraheter, right? I feel that I've earned this money, even though I've received partial payment, I still deserve a full payment of the ksuv because all the effort that I put in for the family. Therefore, Rabbi Gamliel said, because there's the possibility that she may go ahead and justify lying, taking a shvua. Therefore, we have to take shvua off the table. Now we're going to qualify this a little bit. But Rav and Shmuel said that the only time we don't administer a shvua to an almana is in Beis Din. Avachutz le-Beis Din, but outside of Beis Din, mashbiyano. So we will administer a shvua. So what's going on? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, chutz le-Beis Din. Because I will say in Beis Din, you have what's called the Shvuas Hadayon, a Shvuah administered by judges. That is a biblical oath. V'nakat Sefer Torah B'yadei, O Tefillin, U'mashbiya La B'Shem O B'Kinui. Say, what does a Shvuah look like? A Shvuah looks like it means you take an item of Kedusha. So again, whether that item of Kedusha is a Sefer Torah, or that item of Kedusha ultimately is a pair of Tefillin, and the woman literally swears over that particular item using the name of God. Ki da'ashkechan ba'avram simna yadcha tachas yirechi v'ashpiyacha ba'ashem va'onsha meruba. And the punishment for taking a false biblical oath is great. The chutz the Beis Din shvua dirabanan bekilalas aror v'no naket mi divein ansha kol kach. So we'll say this is actually quite interesting. So Rav and Shmuel say that what Rabbi Gamliel's takana was, we cannot administer to her a biblical oath. So we'll say this is actually very interesting, because essentially what we're saying over here is we don't want to administer a biblical oath. You know why? In essence, listen to how compassionate as a religion we are, because we're afraid essentially they are placing a stumbling block before her. We know there's the possibility that she's going to lie. Not lie because she's a liar. Lie because she could justify the lie as not being a lie. I will say, remember, the human mind is quite an amazing thing. The things we're able to conjure up and concoct to justify the things we do. So nobody's a liar. I'm not a liar. I just have an alternate version of the truth. So my alternate version of the truth, if I'm the Amana, is I'm entitled to all of this money. You know why? Have you seen those kids? Have you seen those kids? Right? I put in all of these years. Such as we'll say, if they're not her kids, if they're someone else's kids, the husband's kids. You see all those, you see what I've done for those kids? I'm entitled to this entire ksuva and then some. In fact, I am so generous that all I'm going to collect is the ksuva. I really should sue the estate for more, but all I'm going to collect is ksuva. So Rabbi Gamliel says, look, there's no reason to place a stumbling block before her and make her lie. So therefore, we're not going to have her take a shavua. Now again, we're going to see Rabbi Gamliel set up another mechanism for collection. But Rav and Shmuel come along and say the only time Rabbi Gamliel took shavua off the table is a biblical shavua, which is the shavua that is administered in Beis Din itself. But a shvuah outside of Beis Din, which Rabbi says is what's called, it's without nikitas chefetz. You're not swearing over a sefer Torah or a pair of tefillin. And furthermore, again, it doesn't use an explicit name or a kinu or a nickname of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That type of shvuah we can give her. Why? Why? Because even if she does lie, the stakes are not as high for her. The stakes aren't as high for her, because if it turns out that she swore falsely, she's, I want to say, imagine this. See, normally you would think under any other legal system, you'd say, who cares? If you're going to lie, you bear the consequences. Here, we're looking out for the liar. We're looking out for the liar, because in this case over here, we understand that the liar has purity of intent. You see, we don't normally do this, by the way. Normally we say, if you're going to lie, we're going to give it to you. In this case, because we understand the psychology of the widow, so there's no need to place a stumbling block before her. So no shavua in Beis Din, because if she lies, the stakes are quite high, but we'll give her a shavua outside of Beis Din. So the Gemara says, but 1 second, Rav Rabosei would not go ahead and allow an Amana to collect the ksuva through a shavua, and that was true even outside of Beis Din, to which the Gemara says, Kasha. You know what? That's a good question. Meaning that you're posing a good contradiction. Besura Masniyachi, Rabosei, in Surah, they recorded the previous conversation as we just read it. Benarda Masnuhachi. In Narda, they had a different version of this conversation. Hach is the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Lo Shanu Ela Bebeis Din. So, we'll say in this version in Narda, they read it the following. Rav Yehuda said in Shmuel, we only learned that you can't give an almana a shavua in Beis Din. Avachutz the Beis Din mashmi'an osa. But outside of Beis Din, you can administer an oath. Berav Amar afilu chutz the Beis Din nami ein mashmi'an osa. But Rav says, even outside of Beis Din, we don't give her an oath. Why not? Rav l'tamei, d'rav lo magbi ksuva l'armalta. Because Rav ultimately, again, I both say, would not allow an amana to go ahead and collect the ksuva through a shavua, whether that shavua was in Beis Din or outside of Beis Din. Ay, v'le adre v'ligbiye. Rav both say, remember again, we're jumping out a little bit. What did Rabbi Gamliel say? So we'll say, when Gamliel outlawed the use or prohibited the use of a shavua, of an oath, as a mechanism to collect the ksuva, so we'll say, so, okay, very nice. So now, an almana can't collect the ksuva with a shavua. So how does she collect the ksuva? How, what did the Mishnah say? Okay, right. Yehuda, you gave daf yesterday? Okay, right, good. Through a nether, right? Through a nether. So I'll say, so remember again, how does that mechanism work? Remember, essentially what she says is, if I went ahead and I got any part of the payments for the ksuva, for example, oranges should be prohibited to me forever. Or fruit, peros ha'olam, all fruit. So we'll say, so that's how we give it teeth. So Gemara says, fine. So Rav doesn't want to allow a woman to collect through a shavua, which is fine. That's what the Mishnah says. But the Mishnah makes it sound like that in the years of Rav, when Rav was the Av Beis Din, women, almanas, couldn't collect your ksuvas. So what does that mean? If you kill it and take a shavua, you could at least what? Allow them to collect through a neder. To which the Gemara says, this is amazing. The Gemara says, Bishani derav kile nidre. In the years of Rav, people were very, what's the right word? Not lenient. But people treated Nidarim very lightly. In other words, we'll say that people have no problem vowing. And what? In other words, the vow only has a power if somebody is careful with their Nidarim. In the years of Rav, people were not careful with Nidarim. So we'll say, this actually created almost an impossible situation. So in the years of Rav, see, we'll say, I want to be clear on one thing. When we speak about that an Amana can only collect from the Yisomim with a Shvua. So we'll say, so often the image we go ahead and we conjure up in our mind is that this is a contentious situation. Like there's a debate between the widow and the estate. That, and therefore, again, she can only collect with a Shvua, and that's not the case. There's a Takonas Chazal that you could only collect from Yisomim with a Shvua. Chazal instituted that enactment in order to safeguard the assets of orphans. Because sometimes, especially with young orphans, they don't know the estate of their father. You know, if they're older, perhaps they were involved in the finances of the father. But if they're young, they have no idea. So Chazal wanted to safeguard the estate of the Yisomim by saying, if you want to collect, I'm not doubting the legitimacy of your claim. But if you want to claim, if you want to collect, you need to do so through a Shvua. So we'll say, listen to this very carefully. In the years of Rav, the Gemara says there was an impossible situation. Why? Shavua was off the table. Why was Shavua off the table? Why? Because again, we saw that just before. Because in Amana, we have a fear that she's going to lie about a Shavua. So Rav, by the way, also said no Shavua in Bezin, no Shavua outside of Bezin. Fine. Let her collect with a neder. And essentially, collection goes like this. I want to collect my Ksuva, and I take a neder. All the fruit of the world should be usher to me if I received any part of the payments from a nether. Shabbos says it's a very strong nether. Very strong nether. But it only works if what? If people are careful with nedarim. But in the years of Rav, people trampled upon the sanctity of nedarim. And therefore, again, nether meant nothing as well. So therefore, the Gemara says that literally in the years of Rav, Rav had difficulty allowing widows to collect their ksuva. Quite amazing. So the Gemara says, "Hidai selik mei Rav Huna." Let's listen to this story. There was a woman who came before Rav Huna. Amar la, mai a'avid lach. So there was a woman, a widow, who came before Rav Huna, and she wanted to go ahead and collect her ksuva. And Rav Huna said to her, what do you want me to do for you? Derav lo magvi ksuvasa la'armalta. Because Rav would not allow the collection of a ksuva for a widow, even through a shvua. So Amr la meidi hu taima ela dilma nakitna midi di ksuvasi. So the widow says, I understand. Rav was concerned that what? That perhaps the widow received some level of prepayment of the ksuva during the lifetime of her husband. Watch this. Chaya Hashem tzavakos im neinesi miksuvasi klum. So I said, what did she do? She made a shvua. She said, I swear by God's name that I did not receive any amount of my ksuva. So I say, so watch this. This is amazing. Am Rav Huna mo derav bikofetzas. Rav agrees in the case of a kofetzas. So we'll say, what's kofetzas? Kofetzas literally is a woman who jumps into the shvua. So Rav said like this, a woman can't take a shvua. But if a woman of her own volition went ahead and took a shvua, then what? Then we believe her. So we'll say, so even Rav, who said that we don't administer a Shavua, agrees in a case of Kofetzes, where she jumps into the Shavua, that we're going to believe her statement. So say, listen to this story. There was a woman who came before Rav Barafuna. Amr la. So again, same case. She's a widow. She wants to collect her ksuva. So he says to her, Amr la, my a'avid lech, dirav lo magvi ksuvas, ksuva la'armalta. So Nebuch again, this woman comes before Rav Baruch Huna. She wants to collect her ksuva. Rav Baruch Huna says, I don't know what you want me to do for you. You know, Rav said that we can't allow a widow to collect the ksuva based on Shavua. The Abba Mari, lo magbi ksuva sala armalta, and even my father. So remember, this is Rav Baruch Huna saying, even my father, Rav Huna, my father, my teacher, Rav Huna also did not go ahead and allow for the collection of a ksuva of a widow based on a Shavua. So she says, fine. Amrale, havli mazoni. So she says to Rav Baruch Huna, fine. If I can't get my ksuva, then give me my mizona. So we'll say, that's a very important halacha. Remember, we saw this actually in ksuvas. The halacha is that an almana is entitled to mizonos. She is entitled to support from the estate. And I will say, interestingly enough, the halacha is how long, the statute of support from the estate, what's the halacha? It's technically forever, meaning until she gets remarried. So she gets remarried. So actually, again, an amana is supported from the estate until the time that she gets remarried. So this amana says, fine, you can't give my ksuva, I understand. At least go ahead and tell the estate that they have to pay me my mizonos. So Rabbi Arafuna says, I'm sorry. Amr la mizoni nami lesleich. you no longer have an entitlement to mezonos either. Why? The Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel hatavas ksuvasa bebeizdin ein la mezonos. Because Rabbi Yosei Rav said that once a woman claims payment for her ksuva in beizdin, then what? She no longer is entitled to mezonos. Rabbi Yosei, now what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says ein la mezonos. Me'ata the galya daita the bailin svina. I will say, I have to understand something. When would a woman claim her ksuba? When would she claim her ksuba? Pretty much only when she was ready to get remarried. Because remember, before she's ready to get remarried, there's no need for her to claim her ksuba. Why? Because remember, again, I will say, she's got two things. She's permitted to live in the marital home. The Yisomim cannot kick her out of the marital home. Even if, again, let's say the house was in their father's name. And remember, again, I will say, in a lot of these cases of Yisomim, remember, lav dafka, that they're her children. They could be his kids. So, which means that, okay, you are my father's wife. It's very nice. But my father's not here anymore. They don't feel compelled to take care of her. So the halacha protects her. She can live in the marital home. Plus, she's supported. So therefore, the Gemara says like this. So therefore, the assumption is the only time she's going to collect her ksuva is when she's ready now to get remarried. So look at this. Look at Rashi. Now that she wants her ksuva, she's played her. What's the played her card? Played her card, right? She's played her card. That's what, that she wants to go ahead and get remarried. Ve'ihulo asni bahada ela kol yemei meger armelo sayech bebesi. So you see, they used to write in the ksuva that what? That she is permitted to live in the home and she is entitled to support kol yemei meger armelosayich, all the days of your widowhood. Shehi amana bishvil kavodo. In other words, what the husband writes in the ksuva is, all of the days that you're my widow, you're entitled to support. But the moment that you're no longer going to be my widow because you're going to become Mrs. So-and-so of husband number two, then what? Support expires. In other words, that all the days that you're my widow, I'm happy to support you, right? And then you're no longer my widow and you're looking to move on in life, you should have incredible hatzlach and mazel, but not on my dime, right? So then support ends. So we're supposed to listen to this story. So now this woman's coming before Rabbi Rav Huna, and what happens? She says she wants the ksuva. So what happens? So he says to her, look, I can't give you ksuva, because Lamais, again, my father and Rav both paskind that, again, we can't administer, we can't give support through a shvua. She says, fine, give me mezonos. Sorry, can't help you with that either. Why not? Because now you came to Bezin to claim your ksuva. And once you came to Bezin to claim your ksuva, then what? You forfeit all rights for support. So Amrale, so Bas says, you could imagine she's not very happy with him. Amrale, Afhua le Corse, Kebe Tre Avaratidli. She says to him, your chair should be overturned. Now both say, your chair should be overturned as an expression for death. I wish death upon you. I wish death upon you. Why? Because Kebe Tre Avaratli. She understands, you know what you just did? You paskin like two chumras from me. It's not fair. It's not fair, meaning you're stringent on me on both ends. Well, so she, by the way, in this case, she happens to be right. I mean, not right about wishing the death, but right about the fact that she's really backed into a corner, meaning you're passing like treif to chumras. You're telling me I can't collect the ksuba because you no longer do a shibua, and you're also telling me that now that I ask for the ksuba, I don't get support. You should die. Death should be upon you for backing me into a corner like this. So this is a pretty serious shvua. Now again, you have to understand, the background to this is, we always take curses very seriously. Especially from a woman scorned. We take shvuas very seriously. We take klalas very seriously. I'm sorry, an amana. All kidding aside, remember again, the Ribono Shel Olam himself tells us three times throughout the Torah, not to anger the Almana. See, here he angered the Almana. Well, so obviously it wasn't his intent, and perhaps had she not gotten angry so quickly, they could have figured out some type of way, but he hurt her. So let's listen to this. Hafkua lekurse v'taratsua. So say, so what did they do? They took Rabbi Bar Rav Huna's chair, and they overturned it, and then they quickly overturned it. In other words, I'll say, this is actually quite amazing. They felt that the words of this Almana would have serious damaging powers, and therefore they literally took her shavua, they overturned his chair, and then they turned it over. So they wanted her curse to be chal, so to speak, and then they wanted to write the chair back up. Fafi lohachi lo ifrak mecholsha. So we'll say, as much as Rabbi Bar Avunu was saved from death, but apparently he became very ill as a result of this episode.
She wasn't getting remarried.
I'm sorry?
She wasn't getting remarried.
Correct, but that's
merely making a claim that would
indicate... Seth, that's a rookie question. You know of that. You know the answer to that. The answer to that is... Chazal, whenever they legislate, I didn't mean it was a rookie, I mean it was an excellent question, that's what I meant today. Hey, Chazal, whenever they legislate, have to legislate a low plug, right? Whenever Chazal go ahead and make a takana, the takana applies across the board. So you're saying good. It wasn't her intention to get remarried, but nevertheless, that locha is whenever a woman claims her ksuva, lemais again, she forfeits mizonos. We can't look at her particular circumstances because then im ledavar sof. Whenever Chazal make a takana, we'll say, it's very nice. Seth's question is really a very important one. Whenever you have a matter of rabbinic law always applies across the board, even if your particular circumstances don't match the rabbinic paradigm. So the Gemara goes back there. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yirmiyah. Bira, Adra bebezdin, Vashba chutz lebezdin. So v'lei sei kala, v'leipol b'udnei debayit. So I'm sorry, let me go back. So Amalei Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yirmiyah. Bira, so we'll say Rabbi Yehuda said to Rabbi Yirmiyah Bira the following. Here's the halacha. Adra bebezdin, Vashba chutz lebezdin. If an almana wants to collect her ksuv, Rabbi Yosai, so we don't let her take a shvua in bezdin, but we will what? We will let her take a neder in Beis Din, and we will let her take a shvua outside of Beis Din. V'lese kala v'lepo b'udne. And I want to hear that you are acting this way. In other words, literally, let the word get out, and I want to hear it in my ears. Deba'ina kihechi de'avit b'maisa. Because I want people to know to rule in this particular fashion. So I will say, Rabbi Yehuda is laying down the law to Rabbi Yirmiyah Bira and telling him how to conduct himself in the Beis Din. You could let the Amana take a neder in Beis Din, a shvua outside of Beis Din, and this is how I want you to conduct yourself. In other words, I want word to get back to me that this is how you're conducting yourself in your Beis Din. Gufa. So we'll say now the Gemara goes back and examines one of the previous cases. I'm Rabbi Zeira. Amar Shmuel, lo shtanu ela amana, aval grusha mashbien osa. So remember again, we said before that what? That it's only an amana who we will not administer an oath to. Why? Because it's the amana that we're concerned that what? That she may come to swear. Mora hora, she may come to swear. Excuse me, she may come to swear falsely. But a grusha, we absolutely give her a shua before she collects her ksuba. So the Gemara says, aval grusha mashbien osa. Ugrusha de Adra lo. Now, are you trying to say, we can infer from that is what? That the only way for a grusha to collect her ksuva is how? Through a shvua. But if she took a neder, that would not work. Is that true? Vaha shalcho mitam. But yet they sent over from there, from Eretz Yisrael, the following situation. Look at Hashiva shalcho mitam. Haisha mi Bavel haisa. We're going to talk about a case of a woman who was from Bavel. Vahalchehi ubaila li Eretz Yisrael. And she went with her husband to Eretz Yisrael. Vigir shasham. And he went ahead and he divorced in Eretz Yisrael. Ubaila li Eretz Yisrael. Excuse me. Vahalchehi ubaila. I'm sorry. Vigir shasham. Vitav asul ksuva. Vahasul psak din am chasa shebe Bavel. So we'll say, so this is a din Torah that's happening here. So the couple were from Bavel, they went to Eretz Yisrael, they got divorced in Eretz Yisrael. Now the Psak Halacha is coming regarding the property in Bavel. So Shalcha Mitam, Ech Plonisa Bas Ploni, Kabilas Gita Min Yada, Da'achar Bar Hidya. So listen to this. They spoke about a particular woman who received her get from Achar Bar Hidya. That's the name of the husband, Achar Bar Hidya, Demiskeri Aya Mari, who was also known as Aya Mari. Okay, the Nadra, so we saw this again in yesterday's daf a little bit, right? The idea of names, right? That when we talk about names again, we give a person's name and all names that they're known by. The Miskri Ayamari, the Nadras, the Asarta Perusha Ba'olam Allah, the Lo Kabilas Miksuvasa. So we'll say, let's listen to this. So now this guy, Achabar Hijya, who's also known as Ayamari, is divorcing his wife. She wants to collect her ksuva. So what happens? She makes a neder. And what's the neder? The neder she's making is, I make a neder prohibiting all fruits in the world upon me forever if I received anything other than the following. Now she's going to list the things she did already receive. What did she receive? Number one, a glufkara. Glifka Rabba says a coat, a meal. Glifka Rachad, v'sefer Tehillim Echad, I got a sefer Tehillim. V'sefer Eov, I got a sefer Eov. Umem Shalos Beluim, and I got a worn out sefer Mishle, Rashi says. I've got a worn out sefer Mishle. So she's saying, these are all the things I did receive. V'shamnum b'chamisha mana. And they evaluated these items at what? At 5 mana. L'cheshetava liyadcham. So therefore, the Beis Din said, she admitted that she received these things. She's swearing, this is all I received. And if I received any more, I take a neder, hereby prohibiting myself from all the fruit in the world forever. And the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael sent back a psak din to the Beis Din in Babel. L'cheshetava liyadcham. Hagvua es hashar, when she gets back to Bavel, allow her to collect the rest of the ksuva minus 5 mana. Minus 5 mana. So, Bosse, what do you see from this case? This is a case of divorce. And yet, what's the mechanism by which she is collecting the ksuva? Neder. This contradicts what we said before, because it appeared that before we were saying is, by a grusha must take a shvua. But yet here we're seeing that we're going to allow the grusha, the divorcee, to collect her ksuva through the mechanism of a neder. So what's going on? I'm going to ask you, no, different case. Hahu get yavmin hava. Oh, we'll say that was a get yavmin. What does it mean, a get yavmin? Take a look at Rashi. Get yavmin hava. Yavam ahayazeh, shenasan la get leposla ala achin. Vihiboa ligvos ksuvasa minichse bay laharishon, shenis armalahimena. Oh, I will say, what's the case? The case of this individual known as Acha Bar Hidya was not married to this woman, but rather, again, this woman was a widow, and her husband died without children. And Acha Bar Hidya was one of the surviving brothers. And what did he do, Rabosai? He gave her a get. Now remember, we remember from our Yevamah days, remember, a get by itself does not dissolve a Yibum bond. But what does a get do? A get precludes any of the brothers, from doing Yibum. So we'll say at this point in time, Yibum now becomes an impossibility, which means one of the brothers will do a chalitza, which means that she's going to collect her ksuva. But I will say, where does she collect her ksuva from? From her deceased husband's estate. Oh, so what is this a case of? It's in a case of almana. So because if it's a case of almana, so how is she collecting her ksuva, Rabosai? Through the mechanism of neder, and therefore fits beautifully. Beautiful. Weiter. Hiskin Rabbi Gamliel Azokin Shetein Odera. So we'll say, remember, so far now we understand. Now it's beginning to come together. Mamish, beautiful. It's beginning to come together. How? So remember again, first iteration of halacha, how did a widow used to collect her ksuva? Right? Shavua. Simple idea. She'd come to Beis Din. I swear that I have not received anything. And by the way, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. She could come to Beis Din, as you see from this case, she could swear, I received A, B, and C. But I didn't receive anything else. But let's leave the side of the case. I swear I never received any payment for my ksuva. Rabbi Gamliel comes along and stops that. Why? Because most of you have to understand, Rabbi Gamliel's takana is a reactive takana. Generally, takanos chazal are not generally proactive, they're generally reactive. Chazal saw something happening and felt the need to legislate based on current realities. What does Rabbi Gamliel see? He sees almanos who are lying, not because they're bad people. I'm sorry? Because again, they were moreheter. They said, I know I received money, but I also worked really hard for this mishpacha. I worked very hard for the kids. They're not even my kids. They're other ladies' kids, right? And yet, again, I went ahead and I did everything for them. So again, even though I received partial payment, that partial payment should be credited. That's my child care credit. But in reality, I received nothing for the ksuba. Therefore, I feel justified saying, even swearing, that I didn't receive it. Therefore, Rabbi says, whoa. Once we know that people are being more ahead, the most dangerous thing in life is when people justify things that they know deep down are wrong, but again, they pretend that are right. Then when a person begins to justify, we'll say, this is true. You know, Soloveitchik writes about this in Tshuva as well. You know, if I know that I'm sinning, then it's good. Now, and what is now? Listen to the end of that sentence. Again, it's good because as long as I know I'm doing something wrong, then there's a strong possibility that at some point in time I will correct it. You know, like the Rav writes, The word tshuva we translate as repentance, but it really means return. So the Rav says that life is a big circle. It's a big circle. The only variable is what? Is how large the diameter is. That's what the Rav says. Life is a circle. Only shy people have a large diameter, a small diameter. Everybody comes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Some people do it when they're 20, 30, 40, 50. Some people do it at 119 and 364 days, mamish, drawing less. Every single person comes back, shy in the diameter. But that's only true if I know that what I'm doing is wrong. So again, knowing that what I'm doing is wrong is a maila. It's a maila. The danger becomes in life the moment that I've justified my actions in such a way that it's no longer wrong. It's just alternate. It's just alternate, right? It doesn't have to be like you. I'm doing something alternate, but what I'm doing is just as correct as anyone else. That's where the danger becomes. Because when a person thinks that what they're doing is justified, then unfortunately the hope to return to the right derech becomes very remote. So Rabbi Gamliel says, whoa, these people, that's not a direct quote, but you understand. Hey, whoa. These women are being mora heter. They're going to take shavuos and basedin, and they're going to feel totally justified in doing so. Now already that means shavuos no longer works. We go now to an alternate model, ultimately, of neder. But remember, keep in mind the psak halacha of Rav and Shmuel, that Rav and Shmuel said that Rabbi Gamliel's takana was only in basedin. But outside of basin, we could still what? Outside of basin, we could still administer a shavuot. But now let's continue. So the Gemara goes back to Hiskira Megamil Azaki Sheteinu Deres. Now remember again, so Megamil instituted that what? They can't take a shavuot, but they can take a neder. Amr Rav Huna Lo Shana Ela. Now watch this, we're going to qualify this. Now remember, what did the neder look like? So the neder would look like this. I take a neder. Let's play this out. I'm just giving you the Mishnah's example. I'll never eat fruit again. Or I see Adam David here. I'll never eat meat again, right? So such a neder like that. So let me ask you this question. If she's going to lie about a shavua, why wouldn't she lie about a neder as well? So what's the chilek? Because remember, a shavua is one off, right? I could lie now, and that's it. So I will say, generally, people will take shortcuts when it's a one-off thing. When it's something that I have to live with the collateral results of it for the rest of my life, then a person's going to think about it twice. Even the Almanos, Mora Heter, is going to think about it twice a little bit. Therefore, Gamliel felt, if you make her take a neder, and the terms of that neder are forever, so that's going to be a good mechanism to prevent her from lying. But says the Gemara, we're going to qualify this. Amr Rav Huna, when do we say that a neder works? Get ready for this. Lo shanu ela bishalonises. That's only true if she didn't get remarried. As well, say, remember, understand, there's no statute of limitations. Actually, the truth is, that's not totally true. We saw in Ksuvis that according to some, there is a statute of limitation for collection of Ksuv. But let's operate now with the assumption that there's not, which means you could have the following situation. Let's say a woman gets divorced. Woman gets widowed, and she gets remarried, and she never collected her Ksuvah. She never collected her Ksuvah. So you say there's an I. Why wouldn't she collect her Ksuvah? Or she's wealthy. Let's say she's wealthy herself. She comes from a wealthy family. So she didn't need her husband. She has her own money. So, but then she gets remarried and she says, you know what? I have this entitlement. I want to collect my ksuva. So let's say you could have a situation like that. So Rav Huna said, when does the neder work to allow her to collect her ksuva? That's only assuming what? She didn't get remarried. Aval nises ein madirinosa. But Rabbi say, if she got remarried, then the fact that what? That she'll go ahead and taking a neder is ineffective. Look at Rashi. Ela b'shlonises, la'acher b'shas k'vias k'suvasa. So when does having her take a neder help to allow her to collect the k'suva? That's only if she didn't get remarried. But if she got remarried, then l'mais again, the neder will not help. Will not help for the collection of k'suva. Samara says, nises my taima. Why not? When, if she gets remarried, why can't she still take the neder and collect her ksuva? Oh, the mefer labal. Ah, I will say, right? This is exciting because this takes us back to our glorious nedarim days. Remember those days? The good old nedarim days. So I will say, so what happens? We learned that a husband has the ability to be made for his wife's neder. So we'll say, so what could she do? She could show up in basin and she could say like this. She could say, I take a neder that I'll never eat any fruit again if lamaisa again I collected any part of my neder. I collected any part of my ksuba. She may be lying, but no problem, because what's going to happen? She's going to go home. She's going to tell her husband about the neder and what? He's going to annul it, which is a power that he has. Therefore, says Rav Huna, the neder only has teeth if somebody else doesn't have the power to annul it. But lamaisa, if she's remarried already and her husband has the power to annul it, then that whole mechanism doesn't work. To which the Gemara says, there, ki, I'm sorry, kilo nises Nami lichi minsaba mefer labal. But I will say the truth is, if that's the truth, then again that logic should work even if she's not married now. Because what could happen when she does get married? Her husband will have the ability to be made for all the pernedarim. First thing, says, no, you're not going to get us on that one. Why? Because we learned that already. What did we learn? Ain habal made for bekonah. Say, remember this? This I just want to give you. This is not like an infomercial, but this is the beauty of Daf Yomi, right? Because again, you'll understand now the beauty of being able to see Gemaras and okay, lav dafka that we have in the Durham on our fingertips, but the idea that you see a phrase like this and you remember, we learned this. In habal made for bekonah means Rabbos. We had holo machlokes. This is how we paskin that a husband could go ahead and annul vows that the wife took. I will say, now remember, I'll test your nedarim naras a little bit. Remember, when do the husband's sole rights of annulment begin? Only after when? Nisuin. Good, that was a 50-50, right? Good. Right? Only after Nisuin. Because remember, during Kiddushin, he doesn't have the ability to annul them by himself. He has to do with who? With her father. But only from Nisuin and on, that's when he has sole rights of annulment. So says the Gemara, no. If she took this neder before she got married, even when she gets married, the husband doesn't have the rights of annulment. Therefore, again, Lamaisra, of Huna's distinction makes sense. When again... She's not yet married, so Lamaisa again, the neder will work because the husband doesn't have the power to annul it. But if she's already married, the neder loses its teeth because she could take the neder in Beis Din, then go home to husband number two and he could annul it for her. So one second, if that's the case, maybe we should be concerned that even if she's not married, she'll go to a chacham, she'll go to a talmud chacham, and what's going to happen? She's going to seek annulment and the chacham will annul the neder for her. To which the Gemara says, "Kasavar tzarach lefarik des haneder." No, that's not going to work. Why? Because it will say, "We paskin at what? When you go to a chacham for annulment purposes, what has to happen? You have to declare. You have to declare what the neder was. Now, any proper chacham is not going to what? Is not going to annul the neder once he knows the circumstances of the neder." Rav Nachman Amar Afilu Nises. So Rav Nachman says, the truth is, this works. She could even take the neder to collect her ksur from the first husband, even after she married husband number two. To which this is really? Nises vadai mefer labal. But at the end of the day, won't the second husband annul the neder? De madrina labirabim. Oh, what's the case, Rabosai? We make her take a public vow. Look at Rashi. Birabim, no deres bifnei asara, v'kasavar neder shehud birabim ein lo hafara. So Rabosai, again, we make her take a neder in public, and we paskin that what? That a neder taken in public does not have annulment. In other words, we've learned this before also. A public neder is a neder taken in front of 10 people. A neder taken in front of 10 people does not have any problem. You cannot annul it. If she gets remarried, so she could collect her ksuva im nadra. If she takes a vow, my lab nadra hashta. Are we not talking about a case where she's vowing now, meaning once she's already married? Lo, the nadra meikara. What's the case? The case we're talking about is where she took a vow before she was married. I have a hatanya nises noderes vegovek suvasa. I but Rabbi said we learned explicitly in Abraisa that even if once she gets remarried, she could take a neder and collect her ksuva from her first marriage. Tanoihi. Rabbi say ultimately again this is a machlokes tanoim. The ika lamand amar neder shuhud berabim yeshlo hafara. The ika lamand amar ein lo hafara. I will say, ultimately, again, the Gemara is going to suggest that this is a fundamental machlokes. In other words, let's analyze this. That's really the way it's going to work is the following. If she's taking a neder, so again, the simplest case of neder is when? Is when? When she's taking the neder prior to getting remarried. That case, that neder will work according to everyone. Because also remember, again, we're not concerned that when she gets remarried, that what's going to happen, her husband is going to annul the neder. Why? Because we paskin that the husband's rights of annulment only apply when? To nedarim taken during the course of marriage, but not to nedarim taken before marriage. The conversation or the issue, the machlokis comes up, can she take a neder to collect her ksuva from the first marriage if she what? If she's already gotten remarried. So that depends on what machlokes are both saying. So there seems to be a way to do that, which is make her take a neder berabim. Because again, if she takes a neder in front of asara, that's a neder berabim. But that only works if what? If you hold that neder shehuder berabim Ein lo hafara. See, if you hold that a public neder has no annulment, then even when she's gotten remarried, we could have her take a public neder, and we believe her when she takes that neder, because again, she can't go home and have her husband go and annul that neder. But if you hold that neder shehudah berabim, yesh lo hafara, can be annulled, then what? Then essentially, once she's gotten remarried, there's not going to be a way for her to collect her ksuva, because she can't take shvua, we already spoke about that, but she also can't take a neder, because that neder no longer has teeth, since her second husband now has the ability to annul. Well, so let's just go a little bit tighter for a few minutes. Ibailu. Sarach lefaritas haneder in sarach. So we'll say now the Gemara asks a general question. When we go ahead and we speak about annulment of a neder for a chacham, that I can go to a Talmud chacham and he could annul a neder. So does the petitioner have to explicitly state the details of the neder or not? In other words, we'll say, we saw this in the Darim. Or can a person just say to a chacham, I have a neder, I regret taking it, and the chacham says, Mutalach, right? It's a no. So do you have to explicitly state the terms of the neder or not? Rav Nachman Amar Einu Tzarech. Rav Nachman said, you don't have to explicitly state the details of the neder. Rav Papa Amar Tzarech. But Rav Papa says, you have to. So the Gemara says, Rav Nachman Amar Einu Tzarech. Rav Nachman says that you do not have to go ahead and this explicitly state the details of the neder. Why not? It's actually very interesting. Di amrit sarech, because if we require you to go and explicitly state all the details of the neder, what could happen? Zimnim the gaiz leila dibure. Sometimes you will not disclose the full scope of the neder. Literally, you'll cut your words, the Gemara says. And what's going to happen? The chacham mai dishama mefer. And the chacham will only annul based on what he hears. Look at Rashi for just a moment. The guys lele dibure ve'enu mafarei shakol. You'll cut down your words and you won't say everything. But chacham eno mefer ela ledas mashi ishmarashi says, and the chacham only knows based on what he knows. Hilchach lo yifareit aman nader ela yomar kach nadati va'asarti alei peros min ploni. So what's going to happen? I will say, what's going to happen? The chacham will know only what he hears. Chacham will know only what he hears. And what's going to happen? The person is going to think that the chacham said, therefore, mutalach, it's okay. And the person is going to think that mutalach applies to the whole neder. Meanwhile, the chacham only heard part of the neder. On the other hand, Rav Papa Amar Tzarich Mishum Milsa di Isura. Rav Papa says you have to be mefaret the neder. Why? Ultimately, again, because in Milsa di Isura, look at Rashi Mishum Isura, Shema al Davar Isser Nadra, because maybe a person took a vow regarding a matter of Isser, Kegon al Giboy Ksubas Ksuba, Ukegon Yasra alai Peros Shabaolam, Im Avor Avera Plonis, Ubala Hatur Es Nidro Stam, Verotel La Avor Ha Avera. So Rav Papa says you have to be mefaret the neder because sometimes a person is making a vow regarding something that is prohibited, and unless the Chacham knows the full scope of the neder, the Chacham may come to prohibit something prohibited. So you have a yesodistic machlokes over here. Do you have to go ahead and what? Do you have to go ahead and explicitly state all of the details of the neder? This is actually very interesting. Rav Nachman says no, because what Rav Nachman is concerned is the following. Rav Nachman is concerned that maybe when someone tells the quote-unquote story of the neder, they're not going to tell the full story. But the Chacham thinks he's getting the full story, and therefore he's going to permit the neder based on the knowledge that he knows, but he doesn't really have the full story. So therefore, Rav Nachman actually says, you don't have to go ahead and be mefaret the entire neder, which is actually quite interesting. The logic is that since we're concerned, you may cut off some of the words, therefore what? Therefore, you don't have to explicitly state it at all. I will say, now, what's the outcome of that? The outcome of that is, if the Chacham is responsible, what is he going to do? He's going to question of his own volition. In other words, what it does is, it shifts the onus from the petitioner to the Chacham. Meaning, Rav Nachman is not suggesting that the Chacham should just hand out, blanket annulments. What he's saying is, Chacham, understand, and I will say, this is an incredible yisod, understand that the person is coming before you is most probably of their own volition not going to give you the full story. Therefore, what's your job as the Chacham? Your job is to get it out. Rav Papa, on the other hand, says, no, you need to go ahead, you need to place the onus on the petitioner to say the full story, because sometimes a person may have made a neder in order to prevent some type of aveira, and unless, of course, the onus is on the petitioner, the Chacham may end up going ahead and releasing someone from a vow that they really shouldn't. Well, so let's just do one more line. Tanan, we'll stop over here for today. So again, I'm leaving you again in the midst of this machlokis between Rav Nachman and Rav Papa. So just again, I know it's a little bit of a cliffhanger. I still hope you could enjoy the rest of your day with this Talmudic anxiety brewing inside of you. But this is Mamash Yisod Gemachos. Was it just an important scheduling announcement? I'm going to be out of town for the next couple of days. Yehuda is going to be giving this year. So there's not going to be a Mesilas Yesharim shir from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yehuda is going to be giving the shir. Yes, Hashem will resume. But again, there is still Daf Yomi. And I've asked Yehuda to take attendance, so I'm Yeretz Hashem to make sure everybody's here. So we'll resume in Yeretz Hashem with Mesilas Yesharim, God willing, on Thursday. Regular schedule, Daf Yomi 6 a.m. Daf Yomi 6 a.m. for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
What does collecting on Suva mean? During that marriage,